When you realize what your future can be, you want to do it right. UCF Online offers more than 100 fully online programs, plus personalized support from success coaches, so you can get to the future that's right for you.
From the University of Louisville's Delphi Center for Teaching and Learning,
and the University of Central Florida's Center for Distributed Learning,
I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And I am Tom Cavanaugh.
And you are listening to TopCast, the Teaching Online Podcast. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Kelvin. How are you?
I am great. I really am. You know, I was thinking, though, we haven't really kind of done our little lead-in in a while. Like, you know, we do build this show as a collegial conversation about online digital teaching and learning conducted over a shared cup of coffee, which is, you know, why we talk about coffee sometimes. And sometimes why some of us on this meeting, Tom, talk too much about coffee.
Present company accepted, of course. I think it's our producer, Tim.
Well, Tim likes coffee. I don't know that he's the excessive one, but I wouldn't blame Tim. It's me, Tom. It's me. It's
so you mentioned coffee.
I did.
I've got my UCF mug right here. Let's see if the camera going, whatever. Oh, I can't quite figure it out. Yeah. And in it, I'm going to tell you what I have. Got a Donut House vanilla latte. It's a nice sort of afternoon treat for me.
Yeah, that's nice. This is my first use of this Kentucky mug, kind of from the historic first occurrence of what was called Sanders Restaurant, that became Kentucky Fried Chicken. I have something, Tom, from the coffee archives. Longtime listeners will recall that I employ the dubious practice of carefully freezing ready to grind and brew packets of whole bean coffee when my supply is occasionally overrunning. And this, in my cup, Tom, is a single origin Kenya that you and I shared together in the physical studio back in March of 2020.
March of 2020. That was before everything changed, probably days before everything changed.
That's correct. So, I mean, the coffee is remarkably not bad for being more than 4 years old, but can you find a connection in my cup or your cup to the topic du jour?
Well, not in my cup, except maybe it's sweet, mine. Mm. So there's maybe a little something there.
That's nice.
But for you, you're kind of going in the Wayback Machine. So maybe the whole idea of going back to 2020, digging back into the archives, I think there's a little something there.
Well, that's absolutely it. So you want to lead us on into today's episode topic?
Yeah. So drumroll, please. You know, listeners, if you are unaware, this is the first episode of our 10th season.
Woohoo!
So we've done 9 years of this nonsense, and we're about to kick off a 10th year. And all 10 of our season openers are now available at this URL if you want to revisit them. It's bit.ly/topcastopeners.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I've at least gone back and looked to see what they are, because as we prepared for our season 10 kickoff episode, you know, we wanted to kind of see what we did before. And, you know, you can look at the list yourself, but there's lots of numbers. There's lots of numbers in those past kickoff episodes. Like, I mean, one I'm kind of fond of is 6 deadly sins of online teaching. And there's even the alphabet. Like last year's kickoff was ABCs of digital learning. But so we looked at all those, we saw what was there, but we also found a sealed time capsule. And we opened the time capsule and we found a pack of 5 flavored candy It was a roll of Lifesavers, multicolored, multi-flavored, sealed and well-preserved, alongside our long-term predictions about the future of online higher education made in those early days of our response to the COVID-19 global pandemic, May 2020.
Wow, 4 years ago.
I know.
Yeah, so we made some predictions and stuff. So we figured it was time to crack open the old Lifesavers and reassess our online higher education trajectory here in 2024 as we kick off season number 10. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a look at some of those 2020 predictions, and we've color-coded them, in at least in our document,
that's right,
as kind of right, wrong, and sorta on the mark, and as green, red, and yellow. And we're going to note developments that we did not predict, also some stuff that's come up that we didn't see coming. Mm-hmm. Can you spell AI? All before highlighting where we are heading as a field, and maybe even where we're heading as a podcast here in our last year of our first decade of podcasting. So
first
if you
decade.
Want, first decade, feel free to pause the recording now if you want and refer back to Topcast episode 65, which we called Field Report Number 2, Preparing for the Post-COVID Future. Grab a package of your own favorite five-flavored candy, whether it's Skittles or Jolly Ranchers or Gummy Bears or even Lifesavers, mm-hmm. and we'll be back here when you come back. Okay. Did you do that? Are you there?
Welcome back. So looking back at our predictive comments from May of 2020 and color coding them by what we got right, what we got wrong, and what was somewhere in between, our list is a bit multicolored, like one of those packs of five flavored candies. We made five predictions and then we threw out three other unanswered questions. I remember doing those. Will we see? I remember ending the episode that way. So perhaps we should briefly review those eight items from 2020 before adding in the unforeseen elements and then turning our attention to the future, if that sounds all right. So we'll try not to dwell on the past too long. But from 2020, our predicted longer-term effects of COVID on higher education and digital learning. First, Tom, we predicted, I don't know if you remember this or not, but we predicted that there would be a further culling and diversifying of higher education as a result of this. And I don't know about you, but I kind of felt like, yep.
Yeah, I feel like that's still happening, certainly at the more macro level. And I think COVID accelerated the demise of some, you know, financially strapped institutions that couldn't quite survive. And others have been merged or combined. And so it does feel like that's happening. And by diversifying, like schools specializing more, or at least framing themselves as specializing more as part of their brand communications, I do think that is sort of happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, the second one, I remember at the time. I remember the conversation very clearly, and I remember you're like, nope, you're on your own on that one. I decided I would just kind of put myself out on the limb. I'm like, I'm going to take a risk with this one, and I put it out there, and you said, yeah, I don't think so. And I think you were right to have that position, but I said, I won't even say that we said, but on the podcast, we said that it would be unlikely down the road as a result of COVID, unlikely, I said, that the high enrollment, large lecture hall class would persist. And you said, yeah, I don't know about that. And I think I was just wrong about that.
Yeah, I mean, things just felt so upended during the pandemic that it was like, well, how can anything come back the way it was, you know, while we were in the midst of that? You kind of have to put your head back in that space. And it was wild, right?
Yep, you know, that's right.
But
that's right.
I do think the rubber band has sort of snapped back in some places. And in some places, there's even been like an overcorrection for privileging face-to-face, at least to kind of attract students back. Some of that may be influenced by by other wider societal forces, such as kind of like a, you know, a general dissatisfaction with higher ed that mm-hmm. seems to be in the zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. There's people who are making different choices from COVID, going back to work. There's the economy. Mm-hmm. There's just like all kinds of stuff, you know, lumps in the gumbo that that I think are influencing that. But yeah, I think you're right. I think if you walked across campus at either one of our schools, you're going to see some large lecture halls still going on.
I think that's right. But following up on some of what you just said there, we also predicted, thirdly, that at scale, perhaps there would be a wider implementation of a blended learning approach. And I think we're seeing that. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we did sort of say that the future is blended, if I can quote mm-hmm. Dr. Kelvin Thompson. and I think that is true. Things actually are different post-COVID. Mm-hmm. We've got more faculty teaching online or using digital technologies. Mm-hmm. And even at a school like UCF that kind of was already pretty engaged in those spaces, we've got new faculty that weren't before that are now. Mm-hmm. And I think that has ended up blending the modalities and pedagogical approaches that a lot of faculty are using in a way that probably would not have happened as quickly without the pandemic kind of boosting it.
Now, I would say these last two kind of predictions of the post-COVID future, I think you could argue are maybe kind of a little bit two sides of the same coin, so I'm going to kind of put them out together. One is sort of more positively framed, and one we even had in our notes, well, this is kind of a dark side view, kind of a danger, like a warning, right? But the two are, first, that there would be a larger number of online course sections and a greater reliance on online learning, which I would kind of call sorta, which we should talk about and see if you agree. And then the flip side, dark side, shadow part of that, the danger, is that online course and or online program standards might actually get watered down across higher education. And I'm going to put that in sort of the sorta category as well. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, that's, I kind of agree with the sorta because I think it is idiosyncratic and institutionally context specific, right? Because mm-hmm. it might be the case in some schools, mm-hmm. but not every school. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that makes it a sorta. Mm-hmm. I can see schools that have, at least I've heard sort of anecdotally of schools that have enhanced their online strategy, developed an online hired a chief online learning officer, hello, mm-hmm. University mm-hmm. of Louisville, mm-hmm. you know, where maybe it didn't exist before. And that's if not even a greater reliance on online learning, a greater recognition of its strategic value, which is maybe mm-hmm. another way of coming at that. But the dark side danger of the standards being watered down, I think, is a direct result of emergency remote instruction. Mm-hmm. And some faculty's mental model now of online learning is just, I get in a Zoom call and just talk at students for 2 hours. And that's not good, right? Mm-mm. And so we need to, I think we still have some work to do there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. So then we were into this little area, these last three, so there's five little predictions, and then we kind of ended like Adam West's Batman show, Will? We were kind of saying. So we had these three together. So maybe I'll list them all out and we can kind of talk about them a little bit. Will we see a lasting increase in the number of virtual professional conferences? Will we get more comfortable with our institutions, faculty, and staff working remotely? Will more of our student services occur via web conferencing and/or face-to-face only by appointment as a special circumstance? Tune in after COVID. And, you know, it was kind of like that a little bit, right? And I, in a sense, I kind of put these three in the sort of yes, sort of no, sort of in the middle category a little bit. Now, I will say that first one, will we see a lasting increase in the number of virtual professional conferences? I do think we see that maybe more or different than we did pre-COVID.
Yeah, they're still around.
Yes.
But, being involved with several organizations, I know the internal talk is we got to get back in person.
Right.
And stay in person because it's,
yep.
Honestly, as an attendee, I'm terrible with the virtual conferences. I don't attend like my attention as well as I should. And I get distracted by email and meetings and people come in my office and it's not like I'm really present. And even worse, I sort of feel like I've reached a point in my career where I get more out of the hallways and the coffee shops than I do the sessions. Mm-hmm. And you just don't get that in a virtual conference. You know, running into people, talking to potential partners or vendors and catching up with colleagues and learning stuff like that you wouldn't learn otherwise. So all that to say, I think I agree with your sorta. I think that I think they're here to stay in certain contexts, but certainly not at the level they were when they had to be virtual.
Right. I think I agree with that characterization. Now, that next one, will we get more comfortable with our institutions, faculty, and staff working remotely? I think it's kind of a your results may vary kind of a category there. I think context matters. State, local, institutional directives. I think all kinds of situations are different. But I do think we're seeing a lot more of remote and hybrid work than we did pre-COVID, though.
Oh, I'm seeing it more at UCF. Ironically enough, I'm recording this from home today. You can't tell by my background. I think there's a difference between comfortable and doing it, right? At least personally for me, if I can be that transparent here on the podcast. But it's a reality. And, we've been doing a hybrid work environment that is mostly remote for 4 years now. And I don't think it's going away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think so. And I do take your point that comfortability is variable, relative, both at the individual and organizational level. But I definitely don't see societally at this point, like 100% of workers and 100% of organizations 100% of the time being in person. You know, it just doesn't seem likely.
Well, and it's not even just higher ed or
where
we are. Mm-hmm. It's like corporations that are starting to claw their employees back. But I'm not hearing a lot of 5 days in the office. What I'm hearing is 3 days in the office. So that's like Apple and Google and Amazon, all these places are saying no more 100% remote. But it also isn't 100% in the office. It's you're here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
This one, this wasn't an actual prediction. This was a question, right? But this one might tilt a little bit more to the negative, maybe. But I'm curious what you think. We teased out, will more of our student services, and I don't really remember if we were really even suggesting student services writ large or, no, I assume so. Will more of our student services occur via web conferencing and or you could say face-to-face is only like a special circumstance, by appointment only. Will that happen? And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Broadly speaking, I don't think that's what has happened.
I agree, maybe with one slight caveat, two caveats. One is that like the on-campus student services, I'm not in there day to day, so I can't really speak to their like experience on the ground right now in great detail. But what I gather from talking to those people and being in meetings where I hear them talk is that they want to get back face to face, and we have. I mean, Florida was back face to face ahead of a lot of other places. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't stopped virtual interactions from happening. Like, they have continued, and a lot of that's being mm-hmm. driven by the students, because that's how the mm-hmm. students want to connect. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically they kind of have a choice now where they can either connect mm-hmm. virtually or they can come mm-hmm. in, and mm-hmm. and that the staff has to be sort of prepared for either one.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. So again, it's in that sorta space, right?
Yeah.
So all of that is from 2020. And then we said we would talk a little bit about what we didn't anticipate back then and where we think we're going.
Yeah.
So there were some things. Well, there's a lot, Tom. There's a lot we didn't anticipate. How could we? As you said,
every
how
day,
do you spell AI?
I don't anticipate stuff.
that's right. But there's at least a handful of things here. And we've, I think, touched on some of these previously. But maybe just a handful of these. Like, one of the things we've talked, ad nauseum about is exactly how muddy and mutated modalities would get. I don't know that we sufficiently anticipated that.
Yeah, that's true. Oh my gosh. Like, I was in Central America recently visiting another institution, and they were showing off their, did they call it a hybrid classroom or blended classroom?
Okay.
One of the, either way, my mental model of hybrid or blended learning is like an asynchronous, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. partially online, and then mm-hmm. synchronous, partially face to face. And for them, that's not what that meant. It meant there was mm-hmm. a camera and a microphone in the room, and you could stand in front of the room and you could broadcast it out to somebody else. Yeah. It was sort of the high flex model. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had to do this translation in my head once I realized mm-hmm. kind of what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think that terminology has gotten very, very muddy across the landscape.
Yeah. I mean, look, blended hybrid, it was always a bit of an art to work, but blended and hybrid used interchangeably, I think it was clearer pre-COVID. Now, hybrid sort of means what you said, pseudo high flex, dual mode simulcasting. Blended, even there, sometimes I say blended to people, and do you mean, well, what do you mean by? And you have to kind of define your terms and all that. Yeah. Also, things like bichronous, right? We've talked about that some, I think, right? I think that's maybe Florence Martin perhaps coined that term. It gets used sometimes. Or things like this where we put together synchronous online and asynchronous online, you know? And wow. Sometimes people want to call that like blended of a, but it's like a thing, not primarily
thing.
This yeah. and a little bit of that, but it's a thing.
We've had to, we don't have a lot of faculty doing that, but we've gotten some requests mm-hmm. and we've had to figure out how to fit them into our modality schema. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have, but it's required us to sort of scratch our heads and say, okay, where does this fit? And I just got to say, bichronous sounds like the, you know, bad Transformer villain who fights Optimus Prime.
I am Optimus Prime.
Yeah. Versus bichronous.
Bichronous.
That's exactly right.
We've already talked a lot on past episodes and even hinted here already a little bit. You know, look, we missed the rise of generative AI. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, so did a lot of people. I think we're in good company by not necessarily seeing that one coming to the extent that it has come.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a big one that that we didn't predict.
I also I think we'll talk more about this in upcoming episodes. And I don't know if you'll agree with the characterization here, but and also don't think we necessarily, well, we talked about the dark side and maybe the watering down and all. We were feeling a disturbance in the force. We were feeling something coming as a result of the pandemic response and emergency ad hoc remote instruction. But I don't think we anticipated, at least in the U.S., this federal backlash, I might even say against online education.
Yeah, you're right. We didn't see that coming. It sort of felt like the opposite should have happened, that there would be a little more acceptance and understanding given, mm-hmm. you know, its criticality in kind of keeping everything going during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we're kind of dealing with what we're dealing with right now, you know, shameless plug, tune into the mid-May episode mm-hmm. for a lot more on this. You're not going to want to miss it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels a little weird that something like state authorization reciprocity agreement could just go away, and that it feels like it's so backwards. This weird combination of like Arnold Ventures advocacy groups having influence over the federal government to kind of result in online learning just being super regulated. Caught me by surprise.
Yeah, and you know, tune in next. Yeah, I mean, I think it's stay tuned, right? Not just to the mid-May episode, but in general, we'll see how this all plays out. But maybe that's a good time to pivot to this final little section of where we think we're going. Like, you know, I think our colleague, higher ed futurist Brian Alexander, likes to talk about the plurality of futures. And in the final chapter of the SAGE Handbook of Online Higher Education, we riffed on that a little bit. I mean, I'm just saying, chapter 50, you should, you know, if you have the book, you could read it. If you don't have the book, you could go buy it. Ask your library to buy it. And so I think, you know, the future has yet to be written, but we think we see wet finger in the wind, some things going on. And you know, we have to acknowledge we're still in a bit of flux and transition, even here in 2024 with everything going on that we've talked about. But I think we've already been touching on some things in recent episodes of the podcast and themes that I think point a way. Do you want to maybe kind of run us through a couple of these, Tom, as we start heading toward the finish line?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, like we did just talk about AI, and mm-hmm. I think you and I are both on the same page that it's important to lean into the AI and not mm-hmm. resist it and try to mm-hmm. keep it out. I actually feel like that conversation has already moved past that. Mm-hmm. You know, institutions are already starting to adopt it. Like we've got a kind of walled garden, you know, GPT within the institution now that we can use, that all faculty, staff, and students have access to. So it's not feeding the public LLM. Mm-hmm. You know, ASU has announced this big partnership, you know, with for an AI kind of, you know, strategy. And the few faculty that I think that are sort of left clinging to the notion that we're going to resist AI are going to end up, you know, being left behind, unfortunately. So I think it's really important for us to sort of lean into it. How can we use it for good? How can we help students know how to use it? How can we help faculty learn how to use it? How can we learn to use it ourselves to build the online courses that we're going to deliver?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, in general, like we just, I think, did a recent episode about the importance of paying attention to trusted sources of trend data. I mean, that's a thing. That's like a yeah. like a compass or a sextant, or it's a navigational tool, you know, to kind of get a sense of things. And then related to that is the importance of, and hey, you've heard me say a lot about that in my transition to my new institution over the last 15 months or so as we're recording this episode, the importance of collecting and sharing and talking about institutional data on quality of online learning. That is so important. But then getting out of our individual institutions and doing it across institutions and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, data, you know, we've said it before, as Joel Hartman had said, data trumps anecdote. And you can overcome a bad narrative with actual data. And to that point, speaking of narrative, you know, I do think it's important for us to continue to make the case, the mm-hmm. value proposition that not just higher ed, but in our case is online learning, mm-hmm. is a strategic asset to the institution to accomplish mm-hmm. its goals, and not some afterthought or extension or bolt-on, but it is core if it's deployed and used properly, if it's invested in and used properly. And then it circles back around to your point where the data are critical in helping to make that case so that you can show impact, so that you can tie it back to the strategic plan's goals. Like, look, this is how we're enhancing, you know, time to graduation, and this is how we're helping retention or reducing the cost of the education. Whatever it is, whatever your metrics are, I bet that whoever is listening to this in an online learning organization could probably draw a direct line to some of those.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just recapping what we said a few minutes ago, I do think we're going to have to stay tuned, at least in the U.S., being engaged in the dialogue and negotiated rulemaking, even specifically, and comments, and so, and at least paying attention to federal government negotiated rulemaking and regulations affecting online and digital education. Yeah. We just have to buckle up and stay engaged, I think.
Yeah. So just in the last minutes or so that we have, do we want to say anything about sort of the future of Topcast?
Yeah. I mean, maybe real quickly. We have been looking at the responses that we've gotten so far to the 2024 Topcast listener survey. So thank you. If you took a moment to reply, we really appreciate it. We look at everything that you sent. And if you haven't yet, it's still open for a bit longer. We're not going to close the door on it quite yet, so we'll keep looking. But it's been helpful to kind of glance at those, and we'll plan on building on the successes that our survey response indicate that are going here. Like, for instance, we have a loyal and devoted listener base. 100% of our respondents have been listening for at least 1 year. Nearly a third of respondents have been listening for more than 3 years. And more than 50% of respondents have been listening for more than 5 years.
Wow.
What is wrong with you people?
Get a hobby.
That's right. This is it. We are the hobby.
You can listen to us while you do your hobby, maybe, whatever that is.
That's true. But thank you. Thank you. So we're going to build on that. There, people left, you know, specific comments, but generally our respondents say they generally like what we're doing. But there are some suggestions for us to try out some new things. You want to comment on just a couple of the directions that we're pursuing over this new season?
Well, I mean, one was about our interviews, because every other, just as a reminder, and if you're new, every other episode, so the middle episode in the month, is typically an interview. And we have gotten some comments that people want to hear more from our interviewees, and so maybe mm-hmm. those should be a little bit longer. And we're going to actually deliver on that in our next one.
That's right. Let's not let that linger. We'll get right on it.
Yeah.
Get right on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we'll look for some ways to engage new listeners. In fact, hey, shameless plug, if you're listening to this, you know, maybe share it with a friend, or go back into the archives and some favorite episode from the past, share it with a colleague who you know doesn't listen. Because we need to lean into engaging, because all of our respondents have been listening for 1 to 5+ years. But we also want to look at some more engagement opportunities with our current listeners, add more value to them.
And if you've been listening since the very beginning, like you've listened to every episode,
we'd like
to hear from you, please.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe there's something we could do, but
we'll at least send you a Topcast listener sticker. We'll at least do that, possibly give you a shout out. Heck, I might mail you some coffee. You never know.
Yeah. You never know. Yeah, definitely the shout out we can give you, that's for sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
But we'll keep evaluating this. I don't know how long we'll keep doing this. We'll at least finish this season, and our listeners say we ought to keep doing it, but we'll evaluate annually and keep trying to improve.
Yeah, I mean, as long as y'all are listening, we'll try to keep talking. But I don't know. When you hit 10 years, you do sort of step back and go, "Okay, how's this going?"
Yep.
All right, so should I try and land the plane here?
Please do, please do.
So Kelvin, we all do our best to try to anticipate the future, and I think it's good that we took a look in the rearview mirror to see how did we do. Mm-hmm. But it's so that we can rise to meet the challenges of tomorrow. Sometimes, though, we have to look backward for context and to assess our assumptions before recalculating our routes to our possible futures. Recalculating
route.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's what we're doing. Well, Tom, this has been fun, kind of retrospective, getting back into that headspace, as you said, of early 2020. Glad to get back into 2024 and to look to the horizon now and look forward to journeying forward with you and our listeners. Thanks for the time together. Until next time for TopCast, I'm Kelvin.
And I'm Tom.
See ya.